Greg Bordenaro, you get your own jingle, man. That's pretty cool. Good morning, Corey Myers, filling in for Brian Shackman. And we are checking in with Greg this morning. How are you, first of all?
Good. How are you?
I am very well. Thank you. I was very excited to see the Yard Goats season start. And now you can listen to it, too, if you're out and about or you're working or whatever on WTIC News Talk 1080. So that makes me super happy. The Yard Goats really celebrating their 10th year this year. And a big thing for Hartford. I remember there were a lot of problems with it at first, but it's worked out pretty well, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, the Yard Goat Stadium has been a popular draw for the city. 10-year anniversary. There was a lot of controversy with the stadium. When it first developed, the initial developer was fired. Cost overruns. A new developer was brought in. That led to a long series of lawsuits. That's cost the city a lot of money. And there's still a lot of debt on the property, on the stadium itself. Financially for the city. There's still some debate on whether it was the best investment. Overall, I do think it was a good draw. It is an important draw for the city, especially for a city that's been hurting post-pandemic. There are definitely pluses and minuses. Overall, I think it's a good thing for the city in terms of bringing people from the suburbs to downtown Hartford. Especially during the summer, which is a slower month for the city.
And ultimately, do you think that will, come where everything, comes together and they break even?
Right now, in terms of the city, it's still costing the city more money in terms of the annual debt payments. Maybe we'll get there. Part of it is going to depend on, a lot of the project was dependent on apartments being built outside of the stadium. That was going to increase property taxes for the city and help offset some of the debt costs of the stadium itself. We're seeing some of those apartments being built now. There's one, the Pennant, which is debuted a couple years ago at this point. And anybody who goes to a Yard Goats game this season, they're going to see a lot more construction happening. Actually, the face of downtown in that area is changed a lot. There's a big parking garage that's already up, and the next wave of apartments around the stadium are being built, and there's going to be more apartment development around the stadium in the future. So longer term, yes, there'll be more property taxes generated outside the stadium that will help offset some of the annual debt costs that the city has to pay.
See, I think that's wonderful. I mean, I've been working in Hartford for probably the better part of 40 years, and I just love the city. I always have. I don't know, there's something about it, whether it's the brownstones that you see, like, that are, spattered throughout, or the restaurants that pop up here and there, and that kind of thing. It has such potential, and it's just really good to see that nobody's given up on it.
Yeah, there's still a lot of investment happening in the city, particularly multifamily apartment development. There's a lot of the city's built a number of apartments over the last 10 years, probably over 3,500 or around 3,500 apartments have been built in the city in the last decade. There's a lot more in the pipeline. So there's more people living downtown. The big issue is, getting more employers downtown. Obviously, office, there's a lot of vacant office space coming out of the pandemic in the city. And that's one of the major concern points. How do you get more companies downtown to help fill up some of that office space?
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, and everything's changed so very much, but there's the areas like Pratt Street that just, I don't know, they always seem so magical to me, even though that has changed a little bit, but it's gotten better, if anything. So, once again, it's just really good to see that people are investing in the city of Hartford. Talk to me about the big stuff that is happening in our fine state right now.
Yeah, we've been focusing on a lot at the legislator this year, and one of the big debates happening right now is the film tax credit. Governor Lamont and his budget has proposed lowering the film tax credit. Right now, a company, it's called the Film, TV, and Digital Media Tax Credit, and any company that spends $100,000 in production costs is eligible for a 30% tax credit. A lot of states offer the tax credit in part to lowering doing movie film production, but also digital media and TV shows. You know, for example, ESPN, WWE, World Wrestling Entertainment, they take advantage of the film tax credit. Governor Lamont has proposed to cap it at 25%, which would save the state about $26.3 million over the next 2 years. The film industry is raising a lot of red flags about it, saying that would hurt the film industry and have films and other digital media producers be less inclined to be in Connecticut. Maybe they'll go to New Jersey, Rhode Island, or New York, which have a 30% tax credit or higher. So that's been sort of one of the big debates. And frankly, the film tax credit becomes a major debate every year. It is a lucrative tax credit for companies that get them. Since it was founded, the tax credit was founded in 2007, over $1.5 billion in tax credits have been given to companies that produce digital media or films in the state. Some lawmakers say that's kind of too much money, and they want to draw that back a little bit, especially with the budget guardrails, which has restricted some of the spending at the legislature.
So is the standard pretty much 30%, you know, throughout the country or for places that have that tax credit?
It varies all over the place. So, you know, states like New York, Rhode Island, New Jersey have a 30% or better. There's some that have 20%, some that have 25%. So it does range all over the place. The argument for the film industry is that films tend to go to areas with the best tax credit. The argument of some legislators is that, you know, the state can't afford to be spending that much money for that particular industry. And again, it's a debate that's come up every year. The debate's gotten more heated as the fiscal guardrails remain in place in the state, which restricts some of the spending by the state legislator.
Geez, I wish they would, you know, it's just 25%, people. You're going from money to, and now you're going to ruin the art because of the money. And that just doesn't seem like a thing that should cross, you know, itself. Talk to me about this great article that's on your website at hartfordbusiness.com that's Meet Connecticut's 2025 Power Players. Who are they?
Yeah, so we do our annual Power Players edition every year. It's a statewide thing where we look at some of the biggest influencers in government, in private sector, obviously business, higher education. And we try to switch up the list, at least 50% of the list each year. No surprise, Governor Lamont remains the top power player in the state. He's held that title for basically since he's been in office, because he does carry the most weight, as the governor. We'll see if he stays there in 2 years from now, depending on if he runs again for re-election, which is going to be a big question mark. But we have some people like, you know, Radank Amerik is a top power player. She's the president of UConn, Christy Fantima, who is the head of the Connecticut Business and Industry Association. And, so we identify these 50 power players, and then we give a quick profile, a snapshot of who each of them are and why they're considered to be power players in the state.
Great. It is HartfordBusiness.com. Once again, Greg Bordonaro from the Hartford Business Journal. Thank you so much for hanging out with me before I get out of here. Brian will be back, I think, for the rest of this month. So you should be clear to talk to him next time. Thanks for being here on WTIC News Talk 1080.